Welcome to the podcast Spotlight Yourself, your podcast to get visible in Helsinki, in Finland, or wherever you are in the world. I am Michaela, and by moving to Finland just on my own, I have found my self-confidence and courage to show myself and to speak up. That has definitely pushed my career to the next level, and now I want to help you to achieve the same, and I wish you a lot of fun with this episode. Hello and welcome to this new episode, which is at the same time the continuation of the interview with Marina Ponomareva. You can hear the first part of the interview with her in the last episode, episode 47. If you haven't heard that yet, I would highly recommend you to listen that, because Marina is a person who has changed her career path very often after she has come to Finland, and she has worked in several business fields. She has an impressive discipline to continuously educate herself, to learn new things, and to find new challenges in new companies. At the moment, she is working as a recruiter, and in this second part of the interview with her, she is sharing very interesting and very valuable insights from her job as a recruiter. So, what does a person think who is reading a couple of cover letters and CVs every day to recruit the best talents for an open position? What is really important when a recruiter looks on a CV? How you can negotiate your salary? How can you best express your salary wishes? And also, how do you deal with your references and your job experiences that you have collected abroad? All these questions she will address in this episode. I hope you will find a lot of inspiring ideas. And for the case that you are also in the process at the moment to go through a recruitment, if you have to prepare yourself for a job interview and you have the feeling you would really like to boost your self-confidence and make the maximum out of that, then I would recommend you to check out the coaching possibilities that I can offer to you. You can find all the information on my website michaela-kettner.coach. And now I wish you a lot of fun with the second part of the interview with Marina Ponomareva. And I see, I mean, you're very active on LinkedIn, creating a lot of content, sharing very useful tips for people, what to consider when they are applying for jobs. I think people who want to know more about that, I think they can just follow you on LinkedIn, because I know that the tips you're sharing, they are very, very valuable and very inspiring. Yes, welcome. I have received a couple of questions also from my community about recruitment and like about insights that you can share as a recruiter. So maybe we could start going through them. That would be cool. Maybe the first question, I don't have that on my list, but it's just popping up on my in my head, because you just mentioned, okay, people, they don't know your company where you're currently working, mm-hmm. which is Lead Desk, an IT company where you're working as a recruiter. What would be your best tips? Where can really people look for jobs if they are interested to find a new position?
So for example, do you mean like some job boards or things like that?
I think like the most classic thing is then, of course, like you'd go to LinkedIn and you check the open positions. But if let's say if there are companies that would be interesting for you that you don't see there, like let's say Lead Desk would be maybe a good address for you. They don't have a position open, but maybe you could send an open application. Is there any other way to do a bit of research to really get a picture? What are companies in Finland that could be interesting for me, where I could apply potentially?
That's a good question. Sometimes, kind of like without going too much into the same details, for example, sometimes I notice that say like the company, and I'm talking about LinkedIn now. So I start following them, and when you click follow, on the right side you can see people also viewed or something like that, or companies alike. So let's say if you like companies, well, let's use Lead Desk for the kind of sake of clarity. So we will have, well, let's say, well, not necessarily even our competitors, but, you know, like similar business companies. So you can kind of like, you know, do click here, click there. And in a way, it's like you get stuck, you know, if you ever got stuck in Wikipedia, because you kind of like click, you know, through articles. So in a way, like, that's how you can definitely get stuck. I'm sure the search ends somewhere, but let's put this way, by doing this method, you can pick up 5-6 companies easily. Let's put this way, because, you know, I haven't done it like that much thoroughly, but maybe one more thing comes to my mind, that there must be some international communities nowadays. And of course, when we're talking about international talents, I just assume that not everyone has, let's say, super fluent Finnish, you know, language skills. That's why you need to find those kind of right companies who hire, who do both actually, who have English as their official language and hire international talents. So my point was that maybe try to go, I don't know, to meet up or even like, I don't know, find some, because I'm just a bit, you know, feeling like confused, like where people, you know, socialize nowadays when they create this kind of like communities of information sharing. But you get the idea.
Yeah.
So kind of like something for international talents. And I bet that there are so many lists kind of going on in those communities, like the right companies. Like, I feel like, you know, I should know, but, you know, unfortunately, I don't know. But I hope the idea was clear, that find some communities and there is a lot of kind of information sharing. And of course, how could I forget? Of course, we all know the Facebook group International Working Women in Finland. I'm sure they must have some lists.
Yeah.
So maybe they're kind of one of the first examples. But, you know, in society, in online society, I would say societies.
Yes. So I guess it comes back to networking, right? So
yeah.
Network
yeah, and that was
with the right people, keep your eyes and ears open, and
yeah, because exactly, like, I like that you brought that networking part, because of course, you know, people you know, might look for lists, let's say just for lists, but the good thing with those communities that you end up having new connections with like-minded people. That's the best, and especially it doesn't make you feel lonely in Finland, which sometimes it can be very lonely here.
Yes, no, that's of course another advantage. Then let's say when you decide to send an application or to create an application to apply for a position, I received the question, as a recruiter, what is it what you're focus most or what you're focusing most on when you look at a CV?
That's a good question. I would start with also visual part, because so many people, well, speaking now from experience, before it was kind of my guess, but now I actually speak from, you know, experience of looking at, let's say, like 300 plus at least CVs or even more. So first of all, don't kind of downplay your visual part. And what I mean by that there needs to be, first of all, white space. So it doesn't need to be wall of text. And people, especially maybe entry level candidates, they tend to concentrate on these fancy templates that are very distracting. So I would say that make a visual part a good mix of both quality content, but also nice template, but it doesn't need to be over the top, because what I'm seeing, over the top templates, and you're like, where is the substance? Because it's the substance that will get you the interview and kind of get you now to the substance. What again, like, speaking from the experience, many people, I think in American English, there is an expression for this job search strategy. It's called spraying and praying, which means that you apply to everything anywhere. And I can tell you, and to all our other listeners, like, that I can see when people just copy paste everything from the previous application and apply to my company. People think that, like, oh, sneaky, like, they won't notice, those recruiters. Well, recruiters do notice. So when it comes to substance, kind of going back there, please read the job description. And even if I know that some job descriptions are very messy and unclear, but still try to understand what the underlying business need, because many people forget, doesn't matter what seniority or juniority like of their career is, people forget that companies hire for business needs. They need to solve a concrete problem. Let's say they don't have enough you know, web developers on the team, or they need to increase some capacity of something. And that's why they need a new person, or they need like an instant replacement, you know, someone quit. And you need to kind of present yourself as a solution, because people just apply and they hope for a response, but they, again, you need to have a bit of the business acumen as an applicant. And I know it sounds a bit like too tricky, too much work. However, I also promise from my personal experience as an applicant that will pay off. Once you start positioning yourself like that, it will pay off. You'll be getting more and more interviews instead of just copy-pasting everything from everywhere, like from your previous applications.
Yeah, that's also what I heard often also from friends, you know, that they say, hey, I'm listing down all the experiences that I have and I expect the recruiter to see what my potential is and what can be done with that. But I guess if you
evil
say
laughter,
like,
you know, insert
yeah.
even laughter over
I guess if you say you're looking on 600 or you have looked on 600 CVs already, I guess it's clear you cannot go through every CV in detail and think about, oh, what could I do with that person? Where is the potential? So applicants should figure that out themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know it sounds a bit like unfair, like why do I need to do all this work? Like, don't these recruiters, can't they connect the dots for me? Well, no, we can't. Not because we're stupid, it's because we don't know you. And I think it's your responsibility as an applicant, again, like to market yourself as a solution and also to explain us how your experience translates into what we're looking for. And let's say one more comment, let's say if you're legal counsel in one company, and you're applying to legal counsel, let's say, at some other company, it doesn't mean the same thing, even though you have the same title. So, because, you know, sometimes I was talking to people, especially at the beginning like of my career, like here at LeadDesk, with a bit similar titles, and I learned very fast that I should not assume that people with exactly the same title, let's say, like legal counsel, customer success manager from two different companies. It's basically titles mean nothing. So always provide that substance, context.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. What's then, because I think also people have shared opinions. Of course, you should provide your CV, but then also the cover letter. And
That's
think
true.
What I have heard is people are a bit shared. Like, what is really more important? Like, okay, I can provide my CV, but then I have to write a super fancy cover letter. Or should I keep the cover letter very short? Is the CV more important? What is more important for you, the cover letter or the CV?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like sometimes it's like, how to say, there are two camps of opinions, two schools of thought, you know, it's like also a dilemma, like what comes before, like chicken or an egg.
Yeah.
You know, I would say it's really individual, and I would say not even for companies, but depending on the position. So, for example, so far we have not been hiring that much at LeadDesk for entry level. So for me, sometimes if the CV is, again, has that substance, as I can see how they can match what we're looking for, I would say I have hold nothing. I just want to highlight, hold nothing against if the person did not, you know, attach cover letter. Sometimes for more positions, when I know that the team is very picky and they're looking for this kind of like right match, if the person does not attach cover letter and they just attach CV, I'm feeling like, okay, I don't feel the personality kind of like, how will I justify even by, how to say, inviting them to the phone call. So kind of having said that, I would say, you know, it's good maybe to have a few sentences. It doesn't need to be, again, this like, dear sir or madam, to whom it may concern, because again, that just makes me laugh every single time. It's like 19th century writing or something like that, because you can easily find someone's name. And let's say if someone puts our CEO's name in the cover letter, I still feel like they made an effort to research. I was like, oh my God, like, guys, come look, you know, they actually put the actual name in the cover letter. That's really great. So again, like, sorry, just a bit drifting, because I'm trying to, how to say, like, cover uncoverable in one question.
Okay.
But anyways, like, I would say having something is good if you know that you're, let's say, great match and you showed it in your CV. Like really showed, like, and what I mean is that according to job ad, not like how you feel, but according to job ad, because this is how they say, this is the benchmark for us recruiters. Job ad and knowing also, of course, what team wants, hiring manager wants, but we don't always, you know, say everything in the job ad, because otherwise would be too long. But yeah, so have a like few sentences, but if you don't have it, you know, it's fine. If you're really certain you connected the dots, go ahead. Just maybe one more thing I would like to add. Of course, you know, once you have or do not have cover letter, and if you get to the interview, you know, kind of forget about it, concentrate on still showing me as a recruiter right motivation. Because what I don't see in your CV, I will be asking, how to say, what I cannot read maybe between the lines from your CV. Let's say, why are you looking for the next step? What motivates you, I don't know, having a career, I don't know, like in sales, recruitment, or IT? I will be asking everything on the phone call. And, you know, if I don't hear that on the phone call, like this kind of clear focus, like why? You know, basically that Simon Sinek was talking about for years, like why? If I don't hear that, I will not put them forward. So I would say, instead of just obsessing only what comes first, CV and cover letter, kind of try to plan your whole strategy, like already explaining why you're applying and why you want this job, and also articulating it both, how to say, in written form and verbal. Hope I didn't again, like, you know, went too far, but I thought that needs to be highlighted because I know that so many people just obsess about, you know, just cover letter or just CV, and when I get them to talk to me, it's like you're not the same on paper at all, and that's basically one of the very bad things that you can get as a candidate, that you are a complete mismatch between who I'm talking on the phone and who I'm seeing on paper.
Okay, but what do you think then about video applications? Because I know for some business fields, it gets more and more common. I think it's maybe also more for creative jobs. Maybe if you are hiring in an IT company, a person who is focusing on, you know, being a good programmer or coder, maybe that's a cliche, but I'm thinking about these typical nerds. Maybe they will not send a video application, but just let's say in the case that a person would do it, would it be appropriate, or would it be a bit like overshooting the target, or would it also be that you think I see already everything from that person, there's nothing else anymore to talk about if I would invite them for an interview?
Well, I could feel like that comment, like why people might be hesitant. Well, first of all, just quick thing, like you don't need, if you decide to make a video CV or like video application kind or video intro, we can call it like that, because that's maybe what I have in mind when I'm answering this question. First of all, it doesn't need to be 1 minute long, because just imagine the other person, do you think that the person has so much more time to, you know, watch what you recorded? So 1 minute, and I think, you know, with all of this, like YouTube shorts, like TikTok, you know, our attention span is so short. That's why I would say like 1 minute tops. Do that, and going back to your question, like for whom it might be more appropriate or more relevant, I would say that for IT, for example, in our company, we give them assignment at some point. And, you know, basically, let's say how verbose they are, like how much brevity they have, or how the presentation skills are, you know, it's maybe secondary, because again, we are not solving that kind of business problem with their presentation skills. We need their coding skills, we need the analytical skills, and, you know, video format is not maybe the most appropriate. Having said that, we're also like very sales organization, and in general for any other sales roles anywhere else. I would suggest that if someone would apply with a video intro, that would be really, really beneficial, especially if they know that they're good on camera, because again, the core of sales job is to convince the other person to buy from you. So that would only add some points. And I also want to say that a good recruiter, even if obviously the person is not suitable for the role, I would at least appreciate, and I think like any recruiter who is kind of trying to do the right things, we would just say like, hey, I really noticed your effort. This for this role, I don't see a match. However, let's stay in touch on LinkedIn. And, you know, I will follow up with you because I've been really impressed. So I'm saying that, again, like if you don't get instant gratification for recording your CV, so to say, and video intro, it doesn't mean you should stop. Because I think the right people at some point will appreciate. And again, always bear in mind that you need the right target audience, given what position you're applying.
Okay. Then I received an interesting question. I think it's referring again more to what you're listing in the CV. Regarding previous work experiences. If I don't have work experience in Finland, but outside of Finland, how is that considered? And then also, if I have references outside of Finland that might even not speak English or Finnish, because if you have a reference, let's say in France or in Spain, where people sometimes, or maybe also in Russia, right?
Absolutely, yes.
People don't are not so good in English. So how can I make this working experience being considered, and how do I deal with the references that I have there?
That's a good question. And I would say that's always a bit tricky. So it's maybe easier to kind of like always assess it case by case. Let's put it this way, from my experience, you really have to find some way to sell your foreign experience, because in Finland it's still quite a challenge to get it recognized. So I would say that, how to say, try to package this experience in a way that's beneficial for Finnish company without concentrating too much like how local it is, if you know what I mean, because it's harder to, how to say, to put it from one place to another. And also, while you're doing that, kind of tailoring your experience in a way, like double down on local activities, because I think that your CV would benefit so much more in addition to your clear representation of your foreign, how to say, like skills and experience, having something local. And the same about references. In my opinion, there is nothing wrong having a foreign reference. And yes, they might not speak English, but it's good that, you know, you still have some reference. Having said that, I just know, again, like from experience, that many companies in Finland like local references. And it's okay, by the way, if it would be also personal reference, because, again, like any good recruiter, you know, would understand if you just arrived, you wouldn't have like professional reference. But it signals to us that you want to stay here, you want to integrate. If you have like a lot of activities, you bring your good foreign experience, and like yeah, and you are, how to say, like trying to settle in the how to say, like local in the country. So it's good. But I want to say it is quite tricky. I don't think I have a universal answer for that. And I think we're also coming down to the point where you need to be very self-driven, very self-motivated, because I would say still very few Finnish companies really appreciate the actual value of foreign experience. I don't know why it is like that, but again, if you think about any other country, I don't think Finland is really an exception. So I think it's more like, being a foreign talent is a challenge of on its own, you know, and every country just has like different features.
Yeah.
In Finland, so to say. Yeah.
And I think maybe also another, let's say, I don't know, difference or could be, of course, the salary levels, you know, that you have in different countries. Because, I mean, every country, especially in Europe, has a little bit different tax system. So that also then means that the cross salaries are a little bit different depending on what you get out net at the end. So it is very often that in a vacancy, it is requested, or then, you know, when you fill in these application forms, that you should already answer the question, what is your salary expectation? Yeah. So is there a risk that I can, as a candidate applying for that job, that I can basically disqualify myself from the beginning if my salary expectations are too high?
Well, that's also another very good question. I have seen situation, like I have seen, let's say, two types of situations so far. So, and by the way, it seems to be very common that when we ask about the salary, even not as a compulsory field, but as an optional, in some of our positions, people still tell about the salary wishes without, how they say, like even estimating like what we can or cannot pay. I would say we don't think in black and white terms usually. Well, I can't speak, of course, you know, for all recruiters, but I mean, let's say recruiters at lead desk. So if we see that someone, let's say, put way above our budget, but they're a very good candidate, we can try to talk to them. And then it comes down to kind of like both of those ways. So sometimes people say, oh, I just put like their, you know, just test. Like, I want a bit more, but, you know, with your budget, I'm fine. And I can tell you, this is the moment where you kind of lost your negotiation power, because neither me nor my colleagues can take that person seriously, because, you know, they don't mean it. Like they don't mean the numbers that they put. So, you know, we don't disqualify them, but, you know, we get this kind of strange impression, like kind of, why did you drop all your power? Like, why don't you stand tall behind that number? And then we also have people who, how to say, basically we can't afford. And it doesn't mean that we will reject them again automatically. But let's say if you think about the progress, how we're going through applications or maybe looking through passive candidates on LinkedIn, of course, we have like a priority list. Let's say this top 10, we call, and let's say five of them will meet hiring manager or even less usually. So let's put this way, people with very high salary expectations who we are kind of on the fence, we will not prioritize them. Let's put it like that. It doesn't mean that you will ultimately get rejected when we might still get back to you. And also, having said that, there is nothing wrong wanting a high salary, but you just need to do a bit of research. Let's say if you're applying to startup with a very high start, like the desk is not startup, but just kind of given a bit of like extreme examples, because we're a growth company, so we're like more, let's say, not like in the middle, but like middle plus, let's say. But yeah, like for example, if you're applying to startup early stage, you can't ask for too much money. It's just not possible. But for example, NIB, if I remember correctly, they have had quite salaries. So I would say, like in a company like NIB, you can be quite bold with your salary, and wanting the same, let's say, salaries that NIB would pay in some like banking startup. That's just silly, if you know what I mean.
I understand what you mean. I think it's just then, and of course it makes sense what you're saying. I think just, in terms of real numbers, where can I really get insights? What are the typical amounts of salary that I can expect in Finland for the business field I'm working in?
That's a good question. I'm looking in parallel because I remember this person's name, and I think she also has a website. Yes, I found the website because I have been researching a bit about salaries, and I think she doesn't talk only about salaries, but her salary research is really, really great. So we're talking about Finwords and Minna Frank. I can, like, if you make some kind of like transcriptions or notes, I can send it to you after our
Yes, we can
recording.
put it in the show notes. I think that would be
Yeah,
very good.
exactly. So just remind me to share it, because I think that our listeners will benefit so much more kind of like going straight to that website and researching it there. Because I don't know her personally, but we'll just address her by first name. So like I noticed that Mina, she really referenced a lot of kind of cross-reference a lot of sources. And as you already understood, I'm quite like a study nerd myself. So I was like checking all of those things.
Okay.
Of course, it's always maybe kind of last but not least. It's good to remember, because it's also what I'm seeing as a recruiter. Because sometimes I kind of think like, okay, this company, where's this candidate coming from? They pay this, let's X, Y, Z. But actually, they turn out to be A, B, C, if you know what I mean. So it's good to do research, but then always to be prepared, kind of to think on your feet when the company sets the budget, and kind of prepare is it to accept it or say that I'm not, how to say, I'm not okay with it, and in a way, like prepare to walk away. But it's good, yes, to have number in mind. But let's say also kind of like last but not least, second time, sometimes I would say it's smart not to reveal how much you want, and to get the company to tell the budget first, because I think you might have a bit more negotiation power, in that case.
So is that, let's say, it's not seen as something negative if I as a candidate do the first step and saying, hey, what's your budget actually for that position?
Well, you don't, how to say, you don't, even though, we're in Finland, we don't need to be this blunt. But for example, as I mentioned, that at least at lead desk, we have this optional. And many people write negotiable. I guess still the majority of people write the number, but let's say people who write negotiable, I don't see less of them. I don't think less of them. I will be like, okay, so they maybe want to find out more. And at least at lead desk, kind of how we're solving this problem by making, how to say, only right people apply to our jobs. We've been very transparent. I wouldn't say 100% transparent, because it depends on the role, but let's say with half, maybe 50% of our roles, we publish the salary range right away. So
Okay.
we are telling them what we can afford. And then if they like it, they apply. And if they don't, they don't. But I know not all the companies, publish the salary range. So again, like the point is that you could try it. And again, like if you get disqualified, that's just stupid. But I never got disqualified for writing negotiable. So yes, for example, you get to this interview stage and they ask you like, what are your salary expectations? I don't know. You can always say that the kind of like the potential of growth is more important to me. I do know that you must have a budget for this role. What would be your budget? And I have had different experiences as a candidate. Some people on the hiring team bluntly refuse to tell me the budget. That's a huge red flag to me as a candidate, because like, why can't I not know the budget? Because you do have a budget. Because some companies, let's say, they will try to put a price tag on you. Before revealing the budget. But the good companies, they should have no problem telling you the budget. But you as a candidate need to be prepared again to assess, is this the right budget? Is it what I want? Because so many candidates sometimes say like, yeah, it's okay. And for me as a recruiter, I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't understand what that your nah means, like with a yes or no. So in a way, like let's say if I would say this budget is like roughly like from 2 to 3 thousand, you should stay clearly like, okay, this is acceptable. I of course would hope for the higher range of your budget, because if people are very indecisive, I must admit, then again, does it make like business sense to continue to spending time with them if they didn't give me a clear response? So as you can see, there is companies still do kind of like, to conclude this very long answer, companies still still need to do kind of be more transparent, to hold more responsibility about, you know, the budget, because it should not be a secret. However, sometimes candidates also need to be a bit more responsible by researching a lot and thinking again, like, what's their price?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was also what I think, maybe to paraphrase it a bit, so also put the price tag proactively on yourself, right? To know what is your own value, what are you able to do, what are you worth?
Yes. You don't need to, how do you say, you don't need to reveal it like all the time up front. I know that for some, maybe let's say senior candidates, I know that some people, as an example, they will not go work for less than 7,000 euros, let's say. And that's okay to say. However, you need, in my humble opinion, need to hold some certain subject matter expertise. You like really need to kind of, how to say, back it up. If someone, you know, person that I don't really understand the value, that they're not really selling themselves, kind of demonstrating how it would be beneficial for us to hire, if they would be kind of playing hard to get and saying like, okay, if you don't pay me like 5K, I walk out. Well, that usually doesn't work very well. I don't think like Finland or not, if you know what I mean. It's okay. So kind of to rephrase myself, like it's okay to be certain what you want to get, but you really have to prepare to back it up and show that you've done the research. And also, of course, evidence is really matters.
Yeah. Okay. I think that was a very cool conclusion. I think money is always an interesting topic, and I think many people could took a lot out of that already. I think that these were great insights. Thanks a lot
so much
for going through all these questions. It was really interesting. I could do another or continue for another 30 minutes with you, because I mean it's a topic that
Thank
concerns
so
us all,
well,
right?
Well, I wanted to say that I know that sometimes I especially, you know, maybe who is more visual person, I know that we've been talking a lot, and I know that I sometimes give like very informative answers. It's just, you know, for me, what I left at the beginning of my career, like why it is like that, because I had to like read millions of articles, I guess, like to understand like why people do it the way that they are, because, you know, just kind of like blindly repeating after me today, I think it wouldn't like make it beneficial for our listeners. So it's good to understand like why. And I also wanted to explain, now that I'm on the other side, so to say, I'm not an applicant anymore, I'm a recruiter, like how we see people. Like, I mean, candidates, well, people, but, you know, kind of like people applying. Because, of course, candidates live in their own bubble and the company lives in their own bubble. So sometimes it's good to be like that bridge, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Anyway, one more thing that I already even recommended that book to my colleagues, and like me and my husband are quite fond of this book, because, again, well, he works in sales, he's more like a farmer type. So I think I was also quite, you know, inspired by him, like, and also this kind of like sales techniques. I can also send it to you afterwards. So on this kind of negotiations, it's called Never Split the Difference. So it's like one of this most iconic negotiations book.
Okay.
And I think for salary negotiations, again, because the myth is that you need to be like a super duper negotiator. But sometimes you just need to know like principles, that negotiation is about, you know, finding the common ground. It's not like kind of outsmarting someone and make them feel stupid. It's meeting the common ground. And there's a lot of like cool techniques, including how to negotiate your salary, in that book, which has helped me a lot. Also, again, to understand like what the hiring managers think when I was on the other side of the table.
Okay.
And kind of, again, like show them respect. So not like, again, like I want 7K, take it or leave it. But like how we can meet each other like in the middle. And still, how to say, be happy, both of us.
Yeah, that's a very good hint. So I think we have a lot of material now. We will put everything in the show notes. The website that you recommended for researching the salary level is also that book that you mentioned. Of course, also your contact information, that people can find you on LinkedIn to follow regularly some news about and some tips from the recruitment side if they want to know more. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Many thanks for the interview, and I wish you like all the best also for the future of being that bridge between the companies and the applicants.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that, you know, I have to say, like, should care more about the company. I do care very much about my company. I've been enjoying it so much. However, now, you know, working also, how do I say, like, I still consider myself like a kind of people's recruiter, that, you know, candidates are on the other side, kind of on the other side of the equation. For me, it is very important like to remain approachable, I have to say, it's not like I made a vow that I'm never going to be one of those recruiters who I didn't enjoy working with. But, you know, for me, it really helps that my memories are fresh, like how it is to be like not only international talent in Finland. I think that's kind of always going to be with me. But also, you know, how to be an applicant and what and now that I'm seeing basically people making the same mistakes over and over again, even though none of them are connected. It's a pattern of mistakes.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted also to explain.
Yeah.
Like, for them to get more like how companies make the decision and how they can improve their chances to land an interview and of course land a job. And thank
Yeah.
you so much, Mikaela, for this invitation. Like, very happy to hear it's been very informative for you as
Yes,
well.
definitely. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you have found some new inspirations, and I would be really happy to connect with you via my website, michaela-kettner.coach, or via social media to hear some feedback from you to this podcast and also what your current challenges are, how you want to become more visible. You can find me on Instagram under michaela.kettner.fi and also on LinkedIn. And no worries if you find it challenging to spell my German name. You will find all my contact details in the show notes of this podcast. So I wish you a nice rest of the day, get visible, and stay tuned. Bye bye.